All right. I was just doing my thing right there, getting down. I know people can't believe I get down, or I used to get down. That's Lou Donaldson and his band with It's Your Thing. You may recall that was a big hit for the Isley Brothers, released as a funk single in 1969. Saxophonist, I'm sorry for the more sophisticated, saxophonist Lou Donaldson put his own spin on it and also released an album with this particular interpretation. That album was called Hot Dog, and it was released also in 1969. I like old stuff. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And two things we're going to be talking about today that test your power of observation and analysis. Those are the key words to keep in mind today. Two subjects, and they will test your power of observation and your power of analysis. First of all, let's start off with that big hullabaloo made over the weekend with Oprah Winfrey's exclusive interview with the in-transition royals, the former Sussexes of Britain, which aired on Sunday on CBS. It was hyped, as you know, to the max. It drew a record-breaking 62 million viewers in the United States alone, and 90 million worldwide, according to the New York Times. It, of course, catapulted Winfrey into a media category all her own. But my thing is, just don't confuse what you saw if you saw it. Just don't confuse it with journalism, because it isn't. All right, so now I've told you what I think it isn't or wasn't. Now you're going to tell me what you think it was. What was it? If it wasn't journalism, what was it? Let's start off 888-874-4888. Let's test your power of observation and analysis on that subject. And we have one more subject to go, but let's tackle this first. 888-874-4888. What was that that happened over the weekend that had everybody talking and lots of people all around the world watching this great journalist, Oprah Winfrey, having exclusive an exclusive interview, which of course was pre-taped earlier, and it drew a lot of attention. And based on what was shown, we had follow-up stories explaining the big news items in it. But somehow, this is my contention. You might disagree, and I'm hoping if you disagree, you let me know that you shouldn't confuse that with journalism. Now tell me why. How about that? 888-874-4888. What was that? What did it accomplish? And how did it accomplish it? Okay, let's see if you have your brain on. Noel from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, good afternoon, Eutrice. As you know, and
Good
I'm a former
afternoon.
CBS, I'm sorry, yes, good afternoon. And being a former CBS employee doesn't even matter. But remember at a certain point, the news and entertainment were intertwined at the networks. So that was nothing but entertainment. And I can't speak about the whole program, Utrice, because I didn't watch it, because it just sickened me that CBS News and all the rest of them will stoop so low to talk about who slept with who, et cetera, et cetera. To me, it made no difference, because, like Gary would say, in Libya, where men are being hung upside down and sold like cattle, that's news. So it's just strictly entertainment, and I think that's one of the reasons why the networks are losing people, because people are waking up to the nonsense.
Excellent observation. I happen to agree. But you're only halfway there.
Okay, what's the other half?
Well, I
told you what I thought about, you know, how well they stooped. I don't know what. Could you kind of give me a hint where to go next?
I'm retreating.
Oh, well, give me a little hint.
You're well on your way. It has to do with Oprah.
Oh, well, yeah, she's not a journalist. She's an entertainer.
Okay. What makes you say that?
Well, because she, from the past, I don't think, you know, I once called you a few years back, and I asked you what's the difference between a journalist and a non-journalist. And a journalist, to my recollection of what you said, was something about somebody who actually could ask questions that will not offend anybody, but ask as if they were asking for as a human being. Like, for example, when Harpo Productions was located in Chicago, Illinois, to the best of my knowledge, she never had on Minister Farrakhan. Phil Donahue did, but she never had on Phil Donahue and other members of the Nation of Islam, for example.
Okay. So let's say on these two points, what therefore is your total overall conclusion?
My total overall conclusion is that the like I originally started with my statement, that and many people don't know, the entertainment version of the networks, as probably as well as local stations, were combined with news. You can't have your cake and eat it too. It's either news or it's entertainment. And they choose to believe, because look, Utrice, you and I were old enough to remember Cronkite reports and other things like that, when there was some actual teeth to it before the cable system came in. And all they're doing is entertaining us. They're not educating us. They're not letting us think like you do and others.
Well, thank you, Ed. Thank you for your astute observations today. You are
Thank you.
That's for sure.
Thank you,
Utrice. I wanted to make a point about it because we should decipher what actually happened, what you saw if you watched it, or if you watched the lead up to it. Here was a program that got serious hype, and it involved Oprah Winfrey at the center of it as the person who was going to choreograph all of this and bring it to world attention. Now, this is very significant. It's no secret, as you know, Oprah Winfrey is an African-American woman. I would dare say this is the first time in the history of television that we have a Black woman occupying such a visible space with such authority. But look what happened. She literally created a whole new venue for herself. And I think it suggested an upcoming merger or a sharing of interest between CBS and Oprah Winfrey, in which she gains even more power, more visibility. in the field, but a lot of money. This is incredible amounts of money. So she has catapulted herself into a whole new genre. Barbara Walters has been left in the dust. All the people that, you know, used to be big stars, left in the dust. This is a whole new animal she has created. And she created it as a woman in her own right, an entrepreneur. She produced a very well put together program. I'm not talking about content now. I'm talking about the look of the program. Very lush, very nicely filmed. She had everything going for it. It was really well done. Artistically, you couldn't find any reason to bicker with it. It was very, very well done. So we have Oprah Winfrey entering and creating for herself a whole niche, a whole new niche market, and it is global. This is amazing. Tons and tons and tons of money being made. But what I want to draw your attention to is that the subject was well chosen to cause great interest. And it happened that here we have two Black women playing a significant role. So this is the debut of this kind of, quote, journalism for Oprah Winfrey, centering on herself as the creator and the merchandiser of this new type of programming for herself and for the industry. Getting a record-setting crowd to watch. 92 million people. That's nothing to sneeze at. And the two key roles here were the two Black women, Meghan Markle and Oprah Winfrey herself. And I dare say this is where my disappointment came. I will make a charge. You may disagree with it, but from my vantage point, Oprah Winfrey very skillfully exploited Meghan Markle. Very skillfully. And, you know, when I was growing up, we had a dog named Peppy. And he was a cantankerous dog, but always appeared to be very calm. And all of a sudden, he would break out and start a fight. And no sooner after starting the fight, he recedes and leaves the other dog, who was a German shepherd named Princess, to finish the job. And he will take his place under a porch. And there was his mat, and he would be sitting there with his front legs crossed, observing poor Princess taking on the crowd. And she would come back all battered and beaten up. And there's Peppy, nice and cool, untouched. This is what I thought happened. I didn't watch this whole thing. I couldn't. For different reasons, but I saw what was happening. I think Meghan Markle, unknown to her, she was so skillfully maneuvered into playing this role by Oprah Winfrey. And then Oprah gradually receded, asking non-lethal questions. Questions that don't penetrate much, but that get Megan to start the fight. And the funny thing is, it doesn't take much intelligence to know you can't win this fight. Do you really expect a novice like Meghan Markle to go up against a 95-year-old Queen of England and win? You really expect that? She was doomed from the start. Nobody expects her to win or make any salient points. So she was reduced to being the person who would introduce the so-called bombshell revelations. That's what Oprah used her for. And that's what kept people watching, thinking Oprah was getting to it, digging into the news, getting Meghan Markle to reveal things that she ordinarily would not reveal. But it was silly. They made it appear as though Meghan Markle was taking on royalty, taking on the Queen and all the la-di-da folks. No such thing. She's already dead in the water. That little old lady with the little purse that hangs on her left arm, that little old lady will win every battle and she doesn't have to say a word. And there are reasons for it. This institution called the monarchy has been around for centuries. You're going to come just out of LA and you think you're going to do battle with the Queen and win? So I was very disappointed at Oprah's role. I expected her not to open up Meghan Markle to be so vulnerable out of her sheer, I would say, her lack of knowledge, her lack of understanding as to what she was manipulated into doing. Oprah came out of this like gangbusters. Like I said, she had officially launched a new component of her business ventures worldwide with this so-called interview. And she did not put a toe into the pond. She had no risk in this. She did not take a single risk by asking a legitimate question that a serious journalist would ask. She left Meghan Markle to take the heat and to start trouble, which she will never, ever, ever win. She will never win. Somebody should have told her that a long time ago. Look, you can't win any argument with the Queen. No matter how legitimate it might be, you will not win. So get used to that and devise a different strategy for getting your message across. And to be very honest, what message do you have to get across? You just came into the world a blink of an eye ago. Just calm down and study. Study this system that you're in before you open your mouth. And then after you study the system that you're in, don't open your mouth. Okay? It's fatal. It's going to sink. You're going to lose every time. And look, the Queen didn't say a word yesterday. Except that it was reported in the media that she didn't even watch it. She already has won. She has already killed you off. And you there still hallucinating that you are a factor. You who just came into the royal family a blink of an eye ago, and you're a contender. Lady, just calm down and study the situation you're in. But my great disappointment, again, with Oprah Winfrey, that she exploited, that's going to be my accusation, she exploited Meghan Markle and Prince Harry, pretending that this was a news magazine item, that she had produced a credible product. It wasn't, not to me. However, I see what she had intended to achieve. She had intended to surpass everybody who went before her in almost every single category. I had the most viewers all over the world. You can't beat that. Number two, no matter what you think, I build this as an interview. This wasn't really an interview, not journalistically speaking. Yes, you ask follow-up questions, but none of these questions from Oprah had anything to do with really getting to the root of what was going on. That was not her intention, and she stuck to it. She has now entered a whole new world in which she is the one and only. Whether people like it or not, that's what she has done. However, I'm still very uncomfortable about the fact that she used as her shield Meghan Markle, who should have been smart enough to tell that she was being used. It was smooth, and it was done with, you know, some kind of taste. It wasn't screaming at us to say, hey, I'm using Meghan Markle and her misery. This I've already touted as a bang-up program, a big expose. But I will continue to maintain that was not good journalism. And it was disappointing that a person who didn't have to sink that low and to be so deceptive and to use another Black woman that way. I was very disappointed in Oprah Winfrey for that. Meghan Markle is, to me, just, you know, she's just not yet aware of what she is in for and what this institution is all about. When you're getting married to members of royalty at that level, the first thing you do is read, enroll in a course, and become familiar. Don't forget, this is the tiny little island that dominated and conquered much of the world. and imposed its imperialism on them, its colonialism on them, from that little tiny island. So they have expertise in what they're doing. And you can't assume that because an, quote, interview is billed as such, that that's what it is. Oh, no. Lots of things were happening there. And we will get to see them as they unfold. But believe me, lots of things were accomplished there. Most importantly, we should not confuse that with journalism. We'll take this break and come back and talk about jury selection in Minneapolis right after this. Jury selection begins today in Minneapolis in the case involving the death, and centering, in fact, on the death of George Floyd. As you know, he was killed at the age of 46 in the course of a violent arrest on May the 25th last year. So they're choosing a jury, or trying to choose a jury, including, I believe, four alternates. So it's a full jury of 12 plus four alternates in case something happens to any of the jurors. And the trial, therefore, will begin shortly after they've completed and they've impaneled a whole jury. And the trial begins of ex-cop Derek Chauvin, who is facing murder charges in the death of George Floyd. We've already discussed certain aspects of the case as they unfolded in the preliminary stage. But I want to ask you today, in your mind, based on discussions we've had, based on your own observations, based on conversations you have had with others, what do you think a fair trial will yield in this case as an outcome? What do you think that would happen? We look today at how the case is shaping up in terms of presentation to the jury by the prosecutor and certainly by the defense. But let's take a look at that. 888-874-4888. As this trial gears up, what do you think would occur, or how do you think it might turn out? What do you expect in the demand for, quote, justice, unquote? What would that look like if it were to happen? And what will have to happen if it were to happen? Ed from Queens, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, Chief. How are you doing?
Okay, Ed. Good afternoon to you, too.
Yeah, we're here. Well, I tell you, I got two aspects on this, personally. If we lived in a just universe and there was justice, I think this trial would end up with, the officer being charged with murder, because I believe it would be murder without going into the person. Well, it all depends on how that personal relationship, or how the relationship prior to the incident that he had with George Floyd. I believe there's some reference they worked at a nightclub and they were bouncers or something like that. So I believe if that comes into evidence, then it would be my consideration would be premeditated murder. And that would be the charge, because that, depending upon that prior relationship and how it pertained to the incidents that transpired on that day. But if anything, it should be depraved indifference to human life, murder two, or murder one, if there was some intent could be ascertained from that relationship. In a just universe, that's what I would like to see. What I think is going to happen with this trial, what I hope doesn't happen, but what I think is going to happen, it might wind up in an acquittal, or it might wind up in a hung jury, because anytime you try to bring the police to task, especially when you're dealing with the district attorney's office, I don't believe you get the vigorous prosecution that is required in an adversarial system, which is what we allegedly have. So what I would like to see is probably murder two, possibly murder one, if the relationship implied that there was some type of animosity between these two gentlemen, or the officer had animosity directed towards George Floyd. In reality, hopefully not a hung jury, but maybe just manslaughter, and the other officers not being held accountable under criminal charges. Maybe some disciplinary action will be taken against them. All depends on how the DA presents the case and how he involves these other officers in it. Even though, my opinion, they're culpable based on the video. But you know what they say, it's not what you've done, it's what we can prove.
So. Okay. What do you think the focus of the prosecutor should be, if that is to happen? What should be the main point of focus in presenting this case?
Basically, I think we should concentrate on the events that transpired that day. Concentrate on the actions that the officers took. Concentrate on their lack of procedure. Concentrate on the fact that this man drove his knee into this man's back and caused him to lose breath. Concentrate on the coroner's report that this was murder. Those are facts that are irrefutable. I mean, we can't go with visual. We got to go with the facts. The coroner, an autopsy was performed, and it was determined that the actions of the officer caused this man to lose his life. And that's what we have to concentrate on, depending upon what the extenuating facts are, which I don't know.
We don't know. So we'll, of course, be talking about the case as it proceeds. But I was wondering what your apprehension is at this point, even before, just as it's getting started. The jury is being put together, including the four alternates, and then the case proper proceeds from that. What is your apprehension at this point?
Well, it's how they're laying it out. I mean, the whole thing where they were trying to hire the influencers, I think the DA's office is not concentrating on the fact that there is a coroner's report, that the coroner's report does say that it was a murder. I think that they're trying to paint a picture of reasonable doubt for the officer, so that would taint the jury pool. This jury pool is already going to be tainted due to the fact that unless you lived under a rock, you were influenced by this act. I mean, there were several venues that this video was showing on. There were several for celebrities and people that commentated on the fact. There was a whole protest movement that generated because of this. So that being said, I mean, the DA is going to have to make it factual. He can't let emotions or speculations come into his line of prosecution. He's got to go with the facts. There's an autopsy. The autopsy indicates murder. And this is what we're coming at you with. And whatever other facts that can help paint a better picture of why this act took place, not so much to concentrate on the why, but to concentrate on what was done. The officer drove his knee into George Floyd's back, causing him to not to be able to breathe. And he did it for over 9 minutes, and that caused his death.
Thank you. Very interesting. You've been paying attention. Okay. 888-874-4888. As the case now formally is getting together, in the sense that the jury is being impaneled, they have to get 16 so far. They haven't seated one juror yet, but that's coming. But what are your thoughts at this very point as the case gets ready to be tried in a court of law? What are your concerns? What are your apprehensions? What do you think we have to pay attention, particular attention to in this case? Do you know? 888-874-4888. This case is going to require people to pay particular attention because there is a built-in distraction factor. And the distraction factor has to do with race. And the argument will surface inevitably, I think, about whether this was a race-motivated crime, not necessarily murder, but there was a racial conflict. And somehow it got completely out of control. We don't know. But we have to be prepared for all kinds of theories to pop up at this point. And on the basis of these theories, we will find the prosecution and the defense making their particular cases. So as this case gets ready, it gets itself together, and the parts are being assembled, what should we be paying particular attention to, in your view? 888-874-4888. I would be interested in, and Ed mentioned it, I'd be interested in the medical examiner's report. Because I think it gets at the 1-2 punch in this case. The first part of it was the officer, oh, I keep forgetting his name, but Chauvin, placing his knee and applying pressure to George Floyd's neck, cutting off his air supply, cutting off the air and blood supply to the brain. That is one thing I really think we need to see a thorough examination of the mechanisms of death. And the second piece that I wanted to see play out very explicitly in this case is that we want to get an accounting that tells us what the lead officer, the one who's on trial, what he communicated either in action or by verbal command to the other officers, because there are three other officers involved. They're not on trial yet. They will be on trial after the first trial is over. But that, to me, is a fascinating aspect of this case, because they delivered, in my view, the two of the 1-2 punch. The two being, at some point, Chauvin communicated to the rest of the team, the three officers, that they should press George Floyd hard so that he is firmly against the asphalt of the road that he was laying on. And we heard from one medical examiner that that also achieved the same result. Because when you press on the back, you're actually compressing the chest. And since it appeared that Covenant was satisfied that that knee in the neck did the trick, that was the first point. The second point comes with instructing the others to basically press down on him to compress his chest. So he couldn't breathe no matter what he did. No matter how hard he tried, he just couldn't breathe. That too is something that needs to be looked at very, very closely. 888-874-4888. I'm thinking you have so much to say, but you're looking kind of quiet today. What's going on? Cat caught your tongue? Is that what is going on? You're not really too eager to say? You think you want to reserve judgment until the case starts and you see some glimmer of evidence that you want to expand upon? But this is a time to express yourself. It's a very big case, a very significant case, and it will raise a number of issues that will go on for some time, including racism on the force, including the supervision of police officers in the field, including training, including all the things that we typically talk about in situations where we have confrontations. Because the bottom line is this: at some point, we have a man who was doing well during the first part of the day, suddenly comes into contact with a group of cops and then dies. So it wasn't that he was unhealthy. Something caused him to die, and we need to get to that. We've had too many cases in which death was mysterious but sudden. Jackie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Yatrice. Good afternoon.
Hello.
To you and the listening family.
Thank you.
Okay, first of all, this is very painful, this whole trial and this whole murder, because we've seen it too many times. So, you know, I know you have to do your show and you have to discuss these things, but it's far too much intellectual aspects of it. And I'm not only talking about your show, I'm talking about the way the press handles it, the way the media approaches this. And I think maybe that's why people are quietly thinking and listening, including myself. But if you look at a history of black men being killed, either while in police custody or attempting to put them into custody, this is nothing new. So that's number one. So you have your competing medical examiner's reports. You have your jury pool, which a lot of people of color are excluded from the jury pool, because if they have any kind of felony convictions or anything that would prohibit them from serving on a jury, that already limits the number of people that can be on a jury. That's another problem. Another problem is the massive publicity that this case has gotten prior to the trial. So where are you going to find a person that hasn't heard about the trial or knows about, you know, what happened to him? So these are all problems that going into the case before we even start the case.
Sure, but they're not insurmountable. It's the same all over the country. Media outreach is such that it's hardly the case. Right now, you could know what is going on in a particular case in Podunk.
Right, but that's what I'm saying. When you go on a jury, the judge asks people, can you have an open mind? Can you just look at the evidence? And, you know, you don't go by what's in the paper. But most human beings cannot just have a totally open mind because they've already been exposed to all of this mass media and personal opinions. So that's what I'm saying. I just see this as a problem. So the other problems is that why isn't all of three of the officers being charged? Why didn't they try them all together? I'm suspicious of that.
The evidence suggested one guy, this is Chauvin, was distinct from the rest of the group.
Right, and but you said yourself just a few minutes ago that he told them to hold his legs down. So they're not totally separate actors. That's all I'm saying.
No, they're not. But in a sense, when you're trying to prove murder in the first degree, murder in the second degree, that kind of thing, you want to correlate the actions of the officer with the charge that you're hoping to prove. In the case of the other officers, let's just say they were following orders. That would be their defense. So
okay.
I don't know how that would play out.
I'm not saying
thanks
okay
for calling.
To... All right.
Thank you. Sonia from the Bronx, you're on the air.
Hi, Trace. I was curious if the defense would argue that how long one could breathe, one could hold one's breath as a way to, you know, to explain how Chauvin was not responsible for the death. And of course, no one can hold their breath for whatever, 9, 10 minutes or even 8 minutes. I think a minute and a half is normal for most healthy people. But, you know, I think that they should charge Chauvin with first-degree murder. And, of course, whatever they charge him with will be appealed. So this is going to be a long, drawn-out process, as we already have seen. But you hit him with the highest charge. Let them defend that charge and let the prosecution prove, you know, their case. But you start with the highest possible charge. And, of course, you would want the, you know, everyone to be tried separately. Based on their history, their past history, prior history of abuse. And so if you knock down Chauvin's first-degree murder charge, certainly the second officer, third officer, cannot be successfully charged with first degree. And also,
well,
if you're compressing...
You never know, really. You can't predict right now that outcome. You just can't. We have to take it as it comes and see how the things develop and whether they support your theory.
Well, in the normal world, we could say that if the laws actually were applied consistently and fairly. I agree with you. We don't know. But in a normal world, based upon our history, I'm not that optimistic, sadly, but I didn't see all of the footage. And I wonder, did they compress his diaphragm?
The whole point. When they pressed his back, they pressed into his back. It's the same thing I'm thinking of compressing his chest and the movement of the diaphragm, which is it helps to expand the chest so you could breathe in and deflate it so you could breathe out.
Well, they will argue that since he kept pleading for his life that he was breathing, as one of your previous callers mentioned, but that's not really true. I mean, you can utter certain words for a certain period of time. I mean, if you've ever choked on something, swallowing something, you know that you are able sometimes to say, I'm choking, help me, and as it escalates, you stop being able to speak. So I think those are very fine points that the prosecution must carefully address. How long can a normal person hold their breath? What happens if you compress the neck? What happens if you compress the neck and the lungs? What happens, you know, down the line? What happens if you compress the neck, the lungs, and the diaphragm? What happens if the legs are twisted, crisscross? I mean, that further inhibits your ability to breathe. So there are all these fine points that they really, really must carefully address one at a time and allow them to cascade into the obvious conclusion that this was murder.
I think so. I think you're right. Thanks for calling in and contributing today.
Too.
Brother David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
As I think about this whole case, I think about it from the beginning when that person called the police. And what comes to mind to me is that if you go into a store and you present a piece of paper that's a bill, and somehow you got a bill that was not a valid bill, maybe you got it somewhere else, and you might not have known, is it the police procedure to be called in that case and arrest you for passing a bill perhaps that you didn't know? Now, we take that from there. I think that's important. But let's go out to the street. In this case, if I were a person on the officer's defense, I try to make it sound like this was not a homicide. There was maybe some kind of medical problem that accidentally killed Mr. Floyd. So that's one thing that they would probably do. And the other thing is that I would be concerned with the police department and their training. What was the procedure that would allow this type of restraint of a person being arrested? So there's a very important thing about what is the usual police procedure. And I don't think that this probably is something that they learned in so-called police school or police academy and whatnot, and that ought to be brought into play. But the point is that this case also has the element of white supremacy racism, because you're dealing with a so-called white person killing a black, a so-called black person who African-American, and that makes a big difference who the victim is and who the alleged perpetrator is. So, you know, all of these factors come into play, and as I see it, this is that part I just mentioned, that's a big part of it. I don't think in this case they're going to go heavy for a very serious murder conviction against a police officer who kills African-American in that type of situation.
Well, thank you. Thanks for your opinion today. And that brings us to the end of our program. I want to thank you for calling in and contributing. Let's get together tomorrow and do some more talking at 888-874-4888. I want you to write that number down and keep it handy near your phone. We'll see each other tomorrow. Thanks. Bye-bye.